This week is National Stuttering Awareness Week, and we'll talk with two guests who know a lot about this speech disorder and welcome your questions and experiences. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, May 15th. Someone I know had a stutter as a child. He's now a TV news anchor. And my husband. How about you? Did you or do you now stutter? Do you have a child or another loved one who is dealing with this condition? What's it been like? What has helped or is helping? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We have Carol Seary with us. She's an associate professor in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also joining us is Ken Carroll, the chairman of the board of the National Stuttering Association. Good morning.
Hi, Joy. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Thanks to both of you for joining us. Let's start with Professor Seary, just to get the basics on what exactly is stuttering.
Well, we wrestle with being able to describe adequately what stuttering is because on the surface, when we see something that looks like a hesitation, people in general kind of loosely refer to that as stuttering. But those who know stuttering more intimately and those who are trying to help those who stutter and to, you know, find out the nature about it through research, define it in a much more close way to kind of weed out the hesitation for phenomena that aren't that core experience of stuttering. So things such as hesitating as you're coming up with the word you want to say or putting it in like that as you decide what you're going to say next. We don't usually refer to that as stuttering who are working closely with it. Instead, it's those moments when the person knows full well what they want to say, but their articulatory gestures are blocked in a kind of a holding pattern of some kind, and their speech isn't moving forward for them. And that is more the nature of the stuttering that we're concerned
mm-hmm.
with.
So something is happening in the brain that is stopping the word from coming out of the mouth?
We have some research that suggests, yes, that very likely there's something about the pathways between the sensory and the motor speech areas in the brain that are perhaps a part of why there's this problem with both an inhibition and an at the same time as trying to initiate speech for people who stutter. And yet it's more about an unreliable speech system because certainly there are times when the signals seem to flow through and everything's moving more fluently, and then it's as though the system is unreliable to convey that consistently.
I see. This is, how common is this?
It occurs in about, well, it's about 5 out of every 100 people who may go through some experience of having stuttering-like characteristics, but in most children who, it's more common in preschool children, about 75 to 80% of those who experience you can see that they're kind of in this blocked kind of productions. They go on to not stutter without having any kind of therapy, where another, you know, say 1% of the population are continuing to have problems with an unreliable system that doesn't resolve itself.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that is present or makes itself known in childhood. It's not something that, say, you'd pick up as an adult.
There is a different kind of, well, it's controversial whether how different it is, but there's some different characteristics that happen in the adult population following a stroke or a head injury.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, it has some different kind of, issues going along with it than the early childhood type of stuttering.
So I think my husband, who had a stutter, I don't think it was a severe stutter, but he did have a stutter as a child. I think he did get some speech therapy for it, and he doesn't stutter now at all, I don't think. I mean, you're saying that some children don't need any therapy at all.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They'll just, just grow out of it?
That's, I guess, as good a way to describe it as any, because the other interesting thing about stuttering, usually children have talked very fluently for a while before they have the experience with their system going into a phase where they're not fluent at all, and parents can be very worried about it because the numbers of repetitions of the sounds or syllables at the beginnings of words are really high, and their sounds may be prolonged, and it can look very severe, and the worry is, oh, gee, will this, go on to continue? But severity does not predict the natural recovery. In fact, if anything, it's more the opposite. It can actually go up to a peak of being very severe and then decline over time. And yet, if it hasn't declined substantially over 6 months, that's usually a kind of a sign that says, let's be sure that there's some help with that phase and see if we can get the child kind of working on smoothing out their speech.
Well, let's bring Kenny Kroll into the conversation, chairman of the board of the National Stuttering Association. Kenny, you had a stutter since you were a small child?
That is correct. I've stuttered. I've been a person who stutters. I have been a person who stutters ever since I could remember. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how? And you still do stutter. Is this? Is it the way it's always been? Have you done speech therapy? Tell us about that.
Well, it's pretty much a long. It's pretty much a long story, but I'll try to keep it as sure as I can. Obviously, when I was growing up, as I was growing up, I would have shorter periods. I would have shorter periods where I would have speech therapy. I actually never took it seriously. Up until high school, probably is when I really took it seriously, because because when I was a senior in high school, I was actually planning on joining the Army National Guard as a way of paying for college, and during the evaluation process, it it obviously came out that I had a speech impediment, and because of it, I was actually rejected.
Oh no! So the stuttering has denied you opportunities. Did you eventually get in or not?
Holly, no. Well, so when it happened, you know, I was pretty much like, you know, it was actually pretty shocking, obviously, and no, I never actually reapplied.
Yeah. We are going to take a short pause, and we will continue our discussion about stuttering during this National Stuttering Awareness Week. And we welcome your questions for both of our guests. Carol Seary, who is an associate professor in the Department of Communication, Sciences, and Disorders at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and Kenny Carroll, who is the chairman of the board of the National Stuttering Association. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. As you heard, Kenny has a stutter, and he's going to tell us why he speaks out about it to help others. And our other expert in communication disorders will help us understand the causes and treatments of stuttering. We would love to hear from you if you do or once stuttered or know someone who does. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about learning more about stuttering during this National Stuttering Awareness Week, finding out about causes and treatments from a guest expert on speech disorders, and from someone who has a stutter and has lived with a stutter for his entire life, and finding out what that has meant to his life and how he hopes he can help others. And we do welcome your input, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll get back to Kenny's experiences in just a moment, but I wanted to go back to Professor Seary and talk a little bit about here I am not trying to get the right word here. Kenny's lifelong issue with stuttering. This is something that also occurs to a large number of stutterers, or what is it?
Well, I think we don't really understand, first of all, why there are the percent that go on to continue with persistent stuttering. But what we believe is that, again, it's that their speech system is not reliable for them to deliver the initiation of speech at the point that they are intending delivery. So a person can know full well what they want to say, and yet it's held back as they are starting to speak. And so what happens, though, is because of all the experiences with that and the impact of that, it becomes like that, like the person is on a tight wire when they start that journey of starting to talk. And so the kinds of things that a person does to try to regain their balance appears to those who you know, are the watcher, listener, that they are, you know, flailing in different ways as though they're trying to regain their balance. And in a way, it's because they have, it's like they've been treading on a minefield with their speech system, and they're trying to find the way through, and it's not a smooth path.
You know, what sort of speech therapies are used to try to help someone, I guess, lessen or lose a stutter?
Usually an integration of kind of some strategies for managing the actual manner of approach to the talking in combination with working on letting stuttering go and being more open about just, you know, letting the stuttering be meeting that stuttering moment and kind of trying to make stuttering itself be a little easier. So there's a combination of strategies to attempt, but there's also a lot of emotional overlay that goes with it. And the reactions, the emotional reactions to stuttering are greater than the, you know, people seem to think that it's that, you know, gee, well, it must be emotion and stress causing stuttering. And in fact, the emotion and stress are from the stuttering and not, I mean, it kind of spirals a bit after it starts, but it's not been found to be an original cause of the stuttering.
Mm-hmm. So, Kenny, you are not especially nervous right now on the radio, and that being nervous or stressed does not make the stutter worse?
Usually not. And something I just heard, you know, it's one of those where if I actually used a speech, how do I want to word this? Between the age of 18 and probably 25 or so, I took speech therapy all from about, I would say, four different places, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I used a speech therapy technique that is like this, I'm watching my breathing, I'm phrasing my words. When I go into this, I can be pretty much very fluent. In my mind, though, something else she had said, where in my mind, ever since I was probably 25, 26, I have not had speech therapy. The best therapy that has ever worked for me was letting it go. I mean, I'm a person who stutters. I always will be. And for those of you out there who do have this as well, if you're in fluency shaping, I applaud that as well. But if you incorporate just letting it, accepting yourself for who you are and putting it out there and advertising it, it will reduce your anxiety as well as the listener's anxiety and will improve your overall fluency.
What do you mean by advertise it?
Well, it's whenever you're meeting somebody new or at work at a meeting or whatever it is. Sometimes I have it where I will actually introduce myself as a person who stutters even before I have a block. And it just alleviates all of that anxiety and pressure to where you need to be fluent because of the listener wants you to be fluent.
In fact, your association, the National Stuttering Association, I read, was, I guess, the first association to kind of say, hey, if you've got a stutter, speak out. Don't be afraid to, you know, don't try to hide it. Don't, you know, isolate
Absolutely.
Yourself. And so that's helpful.
Oh, yes. And our, and our association is our association is the premier resource in improving the lives of people who stutter through outreach, research, professional support, and education, and as well as advocacy, and you know, it's like I said, it's something that really helped me was that I woke up one day and I said, you know what, I actually realized that when I was in speech therapy and everything I did wasn't really for me, it was for the listener.
Let me jump in because we have a newscast from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up, and then we will talk more about resources available to those who stutter. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is National Stuttering Awareness Week, and our guests want you to know about the challenges and the opportunities for people with this speech disorder, and they will welcome your questions and your experiences. Do you or did you stutter? What about a loved one? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Thursday, May 15th. Our guests are Carol Seary, an associate professor in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and Kenny Kroll, the chairman of the board of the National Stuttering Association. And we have a caller, Jenna in Detroit. Good morning.
Hi. I have a friend who has a stutter, but he's also a singer and musician. And when he goes to sing, he has no problem whatsoever. He performs all the time. And it made me wonder if a person with a stutter uses their imagination to imagine that they are going to sing or imagine singing as they are going to speak. Is that something that could help, or is there a way that musicality can help overcome the stutter?
Carol?
Well, I think the idea of imagining singing while you speak is not of too I mean, I think we are looking at singing to try to understand why it is fluent while the speech is not. But the idea of imagining singing is a very—it's still as much of a strategy that's like some of our fluency-shaping strategies, where the person focuses on a very intense self-monitoring of the way they're initiating their start of their voicing and their airflow from breathing and so forth. That it would be a lot of conscious work for the individual that is. You know, it's somewhat similar to what is already attempted, but not. I don't know. I guess it'd be interesting to hear if Kenny thinks he's tried something like that, and you know what he thinks of that too.
Kenny, do you know do you stutter if you sing?
So the answer is I know that when I sing or when I do karaoke, which I believe I'm really good at, which I'm really not. I have absolutely no problem I have absolutely no problem with fluency whatsoever. And then out of the hundreds of people who stutter, I know 9 times out of 10, we do not have an issue with fluency when we sing or when we rap or when we speak in unison with anybody else.
And what do you think of Jenna's idea? Would it help if you would imagine you were singing when you were speaking?
I would have to probably I would say it could help, but then again, I would say that yes, it could help, but then on the other hand, who am I singing to? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's my boss or something. You know, I probably wouldn't plug in, you know, and say, "Hi, I'd like to have the day off today."
Well, I would give it to you if you did that.
Well, you know, I'd hope she would too. Right?
Well, you know, let me talk to Professor Siri once again. Is the singing coming out of a different part of the brain than the act, the speech is coming out of?
There are different pathways. It's that the voice and the even the speech sounds are coming through as you're singing. And there are other kinds of conditions where people are very fluent, like speaking to the beat of a rhythm like this also is very fluent. Having like a masking noise, a kind of a noise in the background also is often a condition in which people are fluent. And we are trying to understand more about why those conditions bring out the fluency. One hypothesis I have that I haven't figured out how to test is whether or not it brings out the speaker's listening attention to something different in the self-monitoring process. And so it's been hypothesized maybe it's doing that people do something different with the way they vocalize. Yes, it travels different pathways in the brain. There are many different kinds of things that are going on actually in those different conditions.
Yeah. Jenna, did you have anything else?
No, but thank you so much for answering it so thoroughly. I have wondered about that for a long time.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. Thanks very much for the call. Well, what about you? Do you have a question about stuttering? Do you have an experience with a stutter? Maybe it's your own or a loved one, a child perhaps. Were you one who might have stuttered as a child but no longer do? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 15 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Thursday, May 15th. We are talking with two guests about stuttering, the challenges and treatments of stuttering. And we are welcoming your experiences or your questions for our two guests. We are talking with the chairman of the board of the National Stuttering Association, Kenny Carroll, and Carol Siri, who is an associate professor in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And I wanted to, we have lots of callers who want to join in now, but before we go back to the phones, Kenny, are there any misconceptions or stereotypes, or is there anything you want to tell people about stuttering that we might not know?
Yes. You know, and, well, I would probably say the number one issue would be is that just because I stutter or anyone else has this or whatever it is that we're just like you. We're just like anybody else. We're not less intelligent. We're not nervous. It's just who and what we are. And, you know, everyone has, you know, something in life. And ours, this happens, you know, it's a little more pronounced. And just because we have it, it doesn't mean we're not normal everyday people. And one more thing. If we're having a block, we know you want to help us, and we know you want to, you know, help speed it along. It usually has an adverse effect. And the reason why is that when that happens, we feel even more rushed. And when you don't say the right, when you don't say the right word, then we actually have. Then we actually have to take even more time and correct you and then say the original word in which we wanted to say.
So how should people who don't have a stutter respond to those who do?
Well, each one of us is unique. But I would say that a majority of us would rather have you be as patient as you can and try and maintain eye contact with us, even though we're having a block.
It's harder for you to conduct this conversation with me because we're not in the same room. You would pick up visual cues from me that help or not?
Oh, I don't know. It's a lot. It's like I said. Each one of us are unique. You know, I have friends who stutter, who are actually much more who are actually much more fluent over the telephone as they are in person, and some of us actually are extremely fluent when we get up and do public speaking. Each one of us have our own, you know, ways of when we are much more fluent and when we are more disfluent.
Let's take some calls. We have Scott in Madison joining us now. Hello, Scott.
Hello. My comment was back to a point Kenny was making, or I believe was making, right before one of the breaks. And I believe I caught a piece of his comment being that a turning point for him was recognizing that speaking the point of speaking was for the listener, not the deliverer. And how did that help you in your process of speaking when you could put the thought on the listener rather than the speaker?
Well, the point I was making was that or in my mind was that for several years I wanted fluency all of the time, not only in the therapy room, at work, in my personal life, and I would struggle so hard, and when the therapy I had, and when the therapy I had would not work, I would become extremely frustrated, and I would end up, having, some pretty severe. I would end up having some pretty severe anxiety and would even become severely depressed at times. And when I realized that a majority of my wanting to be fluent wasn't for me, it was for the listener, because I knew they wanted me to hurry up. I knew they didn't have the time. I knew that they didn't want to deal with it. When I said to myself, it's their problem. It's not mine. And once I said, this is who and what I am, I got it through my head. It was like a huge weight. Was lifted off of my chest, and then overall, my fluency has increased dramatically.
Thanks very much, Scott, for the call. I want to take a couple of more callers before we run out of time. Karen in Whitewater is with us. Hi, Karen. What's your story?
Hi. Good morning. Good morning to your guests as well. My younger brother has a stutter, and my parents sought much help for him as a child through the public school system and outside as well. But I have to say what has helped him the most is his choice of careers. He went on to become an actor and a singer as well. He performs in musicals and plays, and he's paid to do this, and it has helped him tremendously. There is no stutter at all when he's on stage, when he's singing, when he's even auditioning in the audition process, when he has to read from a script. It's so mysterious to me why this would be the case. Perhaps you guys could comment on that.
Thank you very much for that call. Let's go to a Professor Siri. It's not just the singing, but reading from a script in an audition. Is there something different going on there?
Yes. When someone takes on like a novel dialect that they read, or they're in an acting kind of mode, it also facilitates the fluency. It's kind of like what Ken was saying about there are times for some when getting in a role of being a public speaker or a different role of being you know, as they get into their phone calls or whatever, they somehow can, again, it's as though the pathways for planning and producing the speech are taking a different route, and that's when things are very smooth and flowing. So it's something yet that is, and yet it's also a very self-monitored, conscious kind of process that the person is having to, you know, to work to do. And it's not what would come out naturally as you are, as the person is trying to just use the speech pathways that they are prone to want to use.
Let me get one more call in. Jim in Milwaukee. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, made a story for encouragement. I have an older uncle. He's in his 70s, stutters all the time. As far as I know, he's never fluent, but he went into business doing computer programming, made himself a millionaire a couple times over by programming games and such, and now he's been retired for years, living off his riches from being a computer programmer, and he's done very well for himself.
Well, it sounds like it made millions of dollars. So Kenny, a stutter does not have to hold one back?
Absolutely not. You know, for me personally, I actually view it as a challenge in that even though I stutter, I'm just as good or better than anybody else. And, you know, and it's helped me have it has actually helped me in my it has actually helped me climb it has actually helped me climb the ladder in my career, actually.
And we're going to have to leave it there. We are out of time. I want to thank you both very much for being with us. It's been very enlightening. Kenny Carroll is the chairman of the board of the National Stuttering Association. We have posted a link to his website on ours. It's westutter.org. You can also follow Kenny on Facebook. And thanks as well to Carol Seary, an associate professor in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Thanks to Robin Cherry and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.